You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am really pleased to have Richard Mayberry with me once again, and he is the author of the Early Warning Report. It is Richard Mayberry's U.S. and World Early Warning Report, Richard J. Mayberry's U.S. and World Early Warning Report. It is it's a mouthful, but it's a letter that really is very, very valuable. I mean, I have trouble reading in my old age, I guess, but anyway, we'll just call it the Early Warning Report. In addition, though, Rick has written a bunch of several books, all of which I have copies of here in my library. You know, I'd say that those books are books like the Thousand Year War, the history books, and books on economics, basic primers to help you understand the world as it really works, on law and history and from a libertarian perspective. And those books really provide a great deal of insight, I think, into you know, why we're in the process of losing so many of the freedoms and liberties that our founders won for us back in 1776 by taking the country away from King George. And unfortunately, much of this, much as the ancient Israelites in the Old Testament, they insisted on having a king. They wanted to have a king like every other country had a king. And they were warned by the prophets that how they're going to lose all their liberties, and pretty soon they're going to have to pay a lot of taxes, and they're going to have to bow to the emperor, to the king. And sure enough, that's what happened. Well, it seems as though in America now, we maybe don't think of them as a king, but we're looking for big government. More and more people looking for big government to take care of all of our material needs, so we don't have to worry about anything. But in fact, there is quite a cost that goes with that, and nobody's more aware of that than Rick Mayberry. Thanks for joining me again, Rick.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's good to be here, and thank you for doing the job you do. There are not very many people who are willing to tell the other side of the story. We're just bombarded with this statist viewpoint that we get from the mainstream press, and especially from the schools. Most of the schools are government owned, and so they teach the kids that the solution to every problem is more government. And everybody comes out of school pretty much. You know, a few others fall through the cracks, but most kids come out of school thinking that the government is just the answer to all problems. And as you mentioned, the American founders, they understood that government, in the words of Ronald Reagan, you know, Reagan came right out and said it, government isn't the solution, it's the problem.
Right.
Most of our problems are from politics, from government.
Yeah, so in your September letter, and I found this was really, really interesting, you spoke about the cancer of politics, hence the name of our show this week. And you stated in your letter that the mission of your newsletter is to help subscribers cope with this cancer of politics. Could you describe what you mean by the cancer of politics? I think you probably just in your opening remarks kind of touched on it, but maybe elaborate a bit more about how much damage politicians are doing. And I guess maybe some of the onus is on us, though, isn't it? We're the ones that are voting for these guys. We seem to just accept whatever the universities teach us without thinking or doing much thinking on our own, right? Too many people, anyway.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, I can see, you know, why that assumption would arise, that it's our fault. But, of course, that's what we're taught in school, is it?
Yeah.
If it's something wrong, if something's wrong, it's because we voted for the wrong guy.
Yeah. Well, we don't have much choice. They're both the wrong guys.
What choice do you get when you go to the polls? You got a Democratic power junkie and a Republican power junkie, and you're supposed to choose between these two power junkies. Well, what are you going to get in office? A power junkie. Whichever way you go, it's going to be somebody who wants that power, who wants the privilege of making sure that other people live according to the rules that he believes in. So it's a hopeless thing, you know. For one thing, you come out of school with this ridiculous view of government being your friend and the solution to your problems.
Yeah.
As I was going to say, nobody back when the American Constitution was being created believed that. They all understood that political power corrupts the morals and the judgment. That was very well understood at that time. And that generation of Americans did more research on what government really is and how it really behaves than anybody before or since. And I urge everybody, you know, read the original writings of people like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, Patrick Henry, and hear what they were saying about political power. And what they were saying is it corrupts the morals and the judgment. And I would like to emphasize the judgment. As soon as you're in office and you've got that ability to meddle in other people's lives, that corrupts your judgment. And you start doing stupid things, which is why governments all over the world have always had this reputation for being stupid. They do amazingly dumb things. And the investor has to understand that this thing is wired to do the wrong thing. Even in a country that has majority rule. A majority rule is mob rule. We've all thought of that. You've met many, many people in your life who, you know, were pretty close to brainless, and they can vote, and they can outvote you.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And that's the way it is. You cannot have any kind of freedom if the majority can vote to take away your rights, which is what they do. They are offered this you know, wonderful thing that will, this government that will take care of them and will make sure that they are not going to run into any hardships or any high risks. And they want that, and they vote for it. And then, you know, what they're actually voting for is somebody who wants that power to meddle in your life. And that's on both sides, the Democrats and Republicans, same thing. And the American founders understood that. And you can see it in the Constitution. And people are taught to see the Constitution as some sort of a special document that embodies our rights and is the heart and soul of America. But read the Constitution. You can do it. It's in the back of a lot of dictionaries, or it's online. Read it and ask yourself as you're reading. Now, if I was running a private organization like a business or a church or a charity or a fraternal organization, any sort of private company, and I had to operate according to these rules, mm-hmm. would I be able to accomplish anything at all? And the answer is no. I mean, the Constitution lays out a system for governing that is so convoluted, so screwed up in so many ways, that if you understand that it is deliberately that way, the so-called checks and balances that the American founders built in there were designed to prevent the government from doing anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Rick, oftentimes you hear the arguments, especially from the liberals, that's why they sort of worship and like the idea of the communist system or the Chinese system, because there you don't have to go through you don't have to deal with all these crazy Republicans that don't agree with you. You don't have to agree. You could just simply have one guy dictate that things get done, right? And a lot of people really sort of like that in America. They think that's what's appealing about communist China, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this assumption that there are these geniuses in the world who know what's best for everybody, and if we just put these geniuses in power, then they'll make everything good for all of us. And it's ridiculous. The only people you get who want to be in power are people who want power, who want the ability to meddle in your life personally. They think they know what's best for you, and they're the ones that run for office. So, it's, again, getting back to the American founders, If you tried to run any private organization according to the rules laid out in the Constitution, you would never get anything done. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly the objective of the founders. They knew that they didn't have a choice to have no government, because if they didn't set up one, somebody else would. So there's going to be a government. And their answer to that was, okay, we'll set one up and we'll cripple it. It will fill the power vacuum so that there is a government, but it won't be able to hurt anybody. And they came very close to having the perfect solution there. For maybe 80 years, things worked pretty well. But then, you know, along comes the Civil War, and the federal government grows immensely powerful, and it's been downhill ever since. Every time you turn around, they're taking away more of our liberties. And we're in the mess that we're in today, where you have to have some guy in power like Trump who is willing to use all of the power of the Oval Office to try to undo the taxes and the regulations, you know, for which he should really be patted on the back a lot. I think he's really done a great job on the taxes and the regulations. And not enough, but sure moved us in the right direction. But unfortunately, what you get when you give all that power to one man is that he doesn't understand everything that he ought to, and he's got the ability to really screw things up very badly, too, which I think is what's going on. He's very good at the domestic issues, the domestic economic issues, like taxes and regulations, but on international trade and the more complicated things and geopolitics, military affairs, oh, man. I mean, he's really got me scared.
Well, yes, and in the limited amount of time we have, Rick, I'd like to ask you a little bit about that. You started also your September letter out by saying, as I write this, I feel as if I've been transported back to the months before 1929's Black Thursday and 1941's attack on Pearl Harbor, both at the same time. Wow. Well, that's all I can say is wow to that. I mean, that's scary. But you were just saying, and honestly, as I think about it, I think, you know, I said wow, because most people don't believe it. Now, their 401ks are going up. The stock market's going up. Trump, of course, like all politicians, tries to fudge the numbers to make things look like the economy is better than it really is. Both sides do that. You know, this isn't the greatest economy we've ever had, unlike Trump would like us to believe. But elaborate a little bit. I mean, how scary is it? And then most importantly, Rick, what should people be doing now to protect themselves against what might be heading our way? And let us know what you think might be heading our way. One of the things I think you hinted at in your letter this month was the idea of inflation, because you noticed that we're seeing the monetary velocity rise a bit, and maybe you can talk about that as well. But what should people be doing now? Because I think most people say, well, I've got this pension fund over here. I've got my 401k. I don't have any debts. I mean, that's not true of a lot of people. I'm talking about people that a lot of people that I know that are middle class, maybe upper middle class people that are relatively well off now. And they're thinking, I'm in pretty good shape. I'm ready to retire. I've got a nice amount of money coming in from Social Security. Medicare is taken care of and all that. Talk to us about why that might not be such a great idea to rest easy right now.
First off, as far as feeling like back there in 1928-29, for those who don't know economic history, 29 was the great stock market crash, which then kicked off the Great Depression. If you look at 1928, the year before that, things looked wonderful. Man, you know, we were in the roaring 20s, you know, everything was beautiful, and then just 12 months later, it all fell apart. And I think that's a very, well, what caused that back then? The main thing that caused that was trade restrictions.
Tariffs.
There was a trade war going on. It had been started by the U.S. government, and it just spread around the world, and it just collapsed the whole world economy. The Great Depression was worldwide, and it was caused by those U.S. tariffs. Now, that's one part of it. And the other part, the remark about the Pearl Harbor, there is a tremendous buildup in the cyber warfare industry that's almost completely ignored by the mainstream press so far. And this is around the world. Governments all over the place are beginning to realize that the cyber war attacks that are going on are getting very serious, are spreading fast. Governments, in their attempt to hurt each other, have turned the internet into a battleground. And it's just like Omaha Beach in 1944, except that it's not tanks and ships and all. It's being done on the internet. The internet is the battleground. And I think they are on the verge of collapsing the internet from them attacking each other over the internet, turning it into a battlefield. Nobody's paying any attention to this, but that does lead me to the answer to your question. You know, what's one of the main things you can do to protect yourself, and that is invest in this cyber war. In the September issue of Early Warning Report, I give 8 stocks that I recommend that I think are just going to go crazy because they are cyber war stocks. Companies that one of them is CACI, and that's also its symbol, CACI. It's a very good firm. It's a cyber warfare firm. It's one of the biggest and oldest. And I think that's going to be a really great speculation. I think that it's extremely likely within 3 years that will rise tenfold because of this war that these governments are developing. And then there are 7 other stocks in that September issue, too. Can't get into them right now. But,
nor should you. And I should tell people that your letter is very inexpensive, and people should – definitely go to Richard Mayberry. The website, just to make sure, it's, I should always have this in front of me. Tell us. Early Warning Report. Earlywarningreport.com, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then 800 number is 800-509-5400. Again, that's 800-509-5400.
Okay, so we have a couple of minutes here. My engineer tells me we have 3 minutes left. Rick, you are big on inflation protection in the form of precious metals and various tangible assets that you want to buy. But I think in your letter you suggested that people shouldn't put everything they have into those assets. Talk to us a little bit about your investment philosophy and some of the ways you just talked about cyber warfare stocks. I know that so-called defense stocks have been a big part of your portfolio over the years. But with 2 minutes left to go, talk to us a little bit about your investment philosophy and how you think people should more or less put their portfolios together.
I think you should have at least 10% in what I call endurables. Those are investments that tend to endure regardless of how much damage governments do their currencies. And those are primarily gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and real estate would be one, raw materials. These sorts of things tend to rise when governments are destroying their currencies. And trade wars tend to lead to currency wars. And you can see that with the fall of the Chinese yuan right now. It's been going in the tank for months. I think that's the beginning of a currency war, which will benefit gold and the other endurables very much. But I don't think you'd need to put more than 20-30% in your financial assets in these sorts of things, because we don't really know what's going to happen. And we do know that most of the population has lost interest in these kinds of investments. So those investments are down a lot, and this is a buying opportunity. So when the day comes, when the mob starts to stampede into these things, they will rise so much that they will cover any losses you take in anything else. So, you know, put at least 10%, not more than 30% in the endurables, and then, you know, when the big bad times happen and the currencies are all falling like crazy, you'll make so much money on those that it'll cover everything else. And that way, you know, if you take that attitude, then you can just sit on those assets for as long as you need to, earning income from more traditional assets like, you know, stocks and bonds, whatever.
Okay, Rick, we're going to have to leave it go at that. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. It's always very insightful. We'll look to do it again sometime in the near future. Folks, that's all the time we have this week. Next week, Jeff Dice of the Mises Institute, Ivan Bebek of Aron, and hopefully Michael Oliver will be with us as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, an advanced exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. Over the last 12 months, Bonterra has raised over $60 million and has attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based Vanek Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource in the second half of 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000 meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator deposit have been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under the symbol BONXF.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Aron Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Aron is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to AuronResources.com and subscribe.